Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We are back.
we are back. To you folks, it's only been a couple weeks, but for us, it's been over a month since we've recorded an episode.
Yeah, I don't even know how to not sound awkward, so I'll just embrace the awkward.
So we're pretending we don't always sound awkward?
No, you're right.
I mean, it's not like we normally have like a real polished an intro.
I know, that's fine.
Sorry, well, folks.
So our movie this week is, because we're starting the
our summer
the theme. Mostly through the summer. That's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
It's teen, late 90s, early 2000s teen horror, like slasher horror movies.
And it's a very lengthy theme.
I know.
The title of our theme is very lengthy.
Slasher, late 90s, early 2000s.
And like, and many of them are like the big ensemble casts of all of the like the It Boys and It Girls from that time period.
Yeah, it's fun. So our first one is I Know What You Did Last Summer.
You do?
No.
Shit. Well, I think maybe. I was here doing this.
Probably. Yeah, you're right. So when what year did that come out? 97?
97.
Okay, so we will be talking about that, mm-hmm. that gem of a movie.
That nugget.
But before we dive into it, what's new with you, Katie?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about what I should share for this portion today because, like, truly, the last time we recorded was, like, the beginning of June, like June 2nd or 3rd or something. And we, you know, got all of our M. Night Shyamalan episodes in the can so that we would be able to continue releasing them over the ensuing month. And I was like, oh, I'm going to have, like, what will I choose from? I'm like, dude, I haven't done shit. Like, I mean.
You got a haircut.
I did. Thank
lovely.
You.
I forgot to mention that. I was like, you look different than I saw you on 4th of July.
Yeah, actually, I got it cut the next day. You know, I've gone really short like this before a couple of times, but it's always funny when you go in and you tell, because I just go to Supercuts, like I don't have a person or anything. And when you tell them that, like, how short you want it, if you're a woman, they're always like, are you sure?
Are you sure?
Or blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, yes, I'm sure. I've done it before. Like, it's okay. I'm not, you know, because it's usually a really big deal, you know, to cut off a lot of hair and go really short.
You're like, I've just gone through a breakup. Just cut it off.
I'm going Britney Spears all over this mob.
Don't ask questions.
But no, yeah, I do like it a lot. And I'm lucky, too, that nice. Tom really likes very short hair, which I think I've heard from a lot of other women that, like, their spouses or partners or whatever, like, don't like short hair. And
so
they
correct.
Would, like, they would never let me cut my hair off. I'm like, well, first of all, let you? But I am fortunate because Tom prefers it really short.
He look very,
yeah,
very nice.
He's into it. I actually came up with this whole lengthy theory at one point about, like, the time period where he was coming of age and, like, you know, the, like, short Winona Ryder, like, the pixie cut was, like, very when he was, like, a tween, like, just starting to, like, start looking at and thinking about girls, like, celebrity girls. There was a lot of, like,
there was,
yeah, like, the those the early 90s, mid 90s, like, very short haircuts. And so mm-hmm. I was like, maybe that's why, like, that, you know, he's into,
like,
that or
yeah,
something.
Nice. Yeah. I'm actually getting a haircut tomorrow mm-hmm. to go back to, like, my
jawline.
Just below the chin mm-hmm. curls, and Victor's likes my long hair, and I'm like, yeah, but it's, like, scraggly.
Like, it needs, like, a little cleaning
he's
up.
He's like, well, I think you look great. I'm like, but you just have, like, rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
And other people have to look at me. So,
I mean, this summer vacation, I've been doing lots of relaxing, going to lots of kickboxing classes. eating a lot of brunch, doing a lot of day drinking. And then, but last night we actually did something kind of fun. The San Francisco Zoo has been doing this thing this summer where on Friday nights they have live music. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, I know that you also, when your kids were little, spent a lot of time at the San Francisco Zoo. Like, that's a very common, like, living in our area, if you are staying home with small children, like, you have that zoo membership and you are there all the time.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely, like, you know, maybe an 8-year span when my kids were little, that we were there, you know, at least once a week, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a
park
very
on float.
Yeah,
yep,
not paying
double,
for parking.
Double stroller.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's a very special place for me because of that. This was actually kind of cool because, you know, the summer hours, the zoo closes at 5. And so they're doing this thing where from 5 to 7 on the playfield lawn over by the playground, they have a stage set up and live music, and people just bring chairs. You can bring in food. Then they also have food vendors and drink vendors. Mm-hmm. And every week it's a different genre of music. And so Tom and I picked last night to go because it was this it was supposed to be jazz. And so we're like, oh, OK. And it was like this old, like a group of old ass guys. Like there was like maybe 8 of them and not one of them was younger than 70. It was like hilarious. But it was fun. There were so many freaking toddlers there.
Oh, geez.
Because if you were at the zoo during the day, you could go to this thing. You didn't have to buy an extra ticket to go listen to the music. So it was like all of these families that had been at the zoo that afternoon and then the zoo closed. And so they just rolled on over and, you know, plopped down on the grass and were listening. And so it was kind of wild because, like, obviously our kids are so big now to be just surrounded, like watching them walking by, like picking their noses and like blowing bubbles and eating bananas and like, you know, just being like quintessential and dancing. It was really kind of hilarious and cute.
That sounds cute.
Yeah.
I remember we usually would show up right when they opened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always wanted them to open earlier. I'm like, how do I wait until 10?
This is a long time.
We've been up for 4 hours.
I was telling Deke this morning, who rolled out of bed at 10:30 today. Mm-hmm. I was like, I remember when you were, you know, you come in my room, I hear like little feet, like, and he'd be like, Mom, Mommy, it's not dark outside.
That was his one criteria.
I'm like, uh-huh. And he's like, can I cuddle with you? I'm like, okay. And then after a few minutes, he's like, I'm hungry. I'm like, okay, get out of bed.
Time to get up.
And we'd be waiting hours and show up at the zoo. And then, but we'd usually get home for lunch.
Yes.
Like, I'm not buying lunch and I'm not dragging.
See, I would always pack a lunch. But yeah, it bummed me out because one of the coolest animal feedings at the zoo is the giraffe feeding, but it's at 4 p.m.
That's so late.
We were never there because it was after nap time. Like their nap times were like 1:30. And so we'd be there from 10 until, you know, like 1. And then I'd throw them in the car, take them home, put them down for their nap. And so we always missed the giraffe feeding, but at least the grizzly feeding was always in the morning.
You're
and
right.
Penguins. Yeah.
Yeah. See, we knew the schedule. We're like, well, let's run to the
oh my God, it's almost time.
It's so fun.
Yeah. So zoo memories are fun.
Yeah, that is super fun.
Yeah. And
nice.
So this is like kind of a loaded question though, but what the frick is new with you?
Oh, what is it new with me? Well, Victor and I, we went on our honeymoon. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. I kept everyone posted. It's my first time kind of in my life documenting a lot of stuff because I don't really do that. I'm very lazy because I also enjoy living in the moment. Mm-hmm. I don't really take photos that much. And but I took freaking a million pictures and we went everywhere. Like we went to Rome. We're there for like a night. Then we went to the Amalfi Coast and we're there for 4 nights. And then we went to where the hell did we go? Lake Como. No.
What?
Florence. We went to Florence.
Yeah.
We're there for 6 days. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. I mean, we went to the Academia. We saw the David. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you went to the Uffizi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you're going and you're like, oh, there's just like a Michelangelo. No big deal. Or no, there's like a Da Vinci.
Yeah.
And you're like, what the fuck? All the turtles. All the Ninja Turtles. Amazing food. Hanging out. Mm-hmm. Great drinks. Like, went to Lake Como.
Nice
more
weather.
Gelato. We're sweating our tits off. Sweating. Then we went to Bruges and Brussels, and we went to Charleroi in Belgium and met Victor's. I met Victor's family for the first time, and he obviously knows them, so he's gone there to visit a handful of times, and so that was the cool part.
Yeah,
meeting like 30 mainly just French speaking people who are all related to my now husband, and like, welcome to the family.
Yeah.
And like, they wrote us a nice card for congratulating us on our wedding. And they're all like, here. And then they had a bunch of euros that they gave it as a wedding gift.
Yeah,
and
you had to do an extra money dance.
It was, yeah, exactly. It was just really, it's really nice. It's like, I've never had people in my own family treat me like anything of value. So it's very different having that family like embracing us. And so happy to have us there. So, and then we ended up. After Brussels and Bruges and all those places we went to, we went back to Rome and spent a good chunk of time there, just like seeing everything that was, you know, anything that you've seen in history books. I do have to say, though, the Colosseum is amazing, and you see it and you're like, that's insane that this is still here.
Yeah.
But the coolest historical place, I think, would have to be visiting the city of Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
Which was insane.
Yeah.
Cause have you ever gone to there?
No. But there is a text about it in our ELA curriculum. So I've read about it many times.
Well, there's also the I Survived Pompeii, the book for young adults
for kids.
Leaders. Yes. Yeah. But it's basically a big city. It's all cobblestone. And it's like frozen in time, basically. And you're like, this is from 79 AD.
Yeah.
That this freaking crap is here. This is crazy. So we did like 12,000 steps that day. I was like, oh, we have to see everything. It was amazing. And then we came home and had a 4th of July party. And then my family got COVID and I played caretaker. And
I just thought Victor had COVID.
Dee got it.
Oh, no way.
Dee got it. Then Victor got it. Oh. Which is weird because I'm the one who took care of Deke.
Yeah. You're just impervious.
I guess. Whew, I need to knock on stuff. But now everyone's fine.
Great.
So that's my very quick and dirty update. But you saw my updates on
Facebook,
social media. Yeah. So to see all the food pictures. Basically, the most important part was the food.
Of course.
I'm like, how much arancini is too much?
Let's find out.
I'm going to eat all of it. Also, let's do a shout out to our friend Florence.
Ah, yes. Yeah, speaking of Florence.
Florence. Her favorite city in Europe is Florence also.
But
that's not why she's named Florence.
No.
Maybe it was her parents' favorite city. I don't know. But she started chemo and hopefully will be on the mend and doing well very soon. But we love you.
Yeah. Take care.
Text us if we need. Well, text me.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm too far away. I'm not going to be the person to, you know, run you over a jug of milk.
No. But I'm saying, text me for food from Victor.
Oh, because I'm a shitty cook. I see.
I'm not including myself in the cooking. It's Victor's food. No, it's widely known that if the kids are like, what's for dinner? And I'm like, oh, I'm making dinner. Like, their faces fall.
They go, boo. I'm not hungry.
I'll just make macaroni and cheese.
I'm going to go eat at my friend's house.
I'm like, I'm not. Okay.
I'm going to go beg at the McDonald's drive-thru.
Like, I kept you alive for, like, many years till this man now is your stepfather making you delicious.
Yeah, he ruined them for you.
I'm not bitter. Anyway.
Nope.
Anyway, get better.
Yep, we love you.
We're rooting for you. We love you. Okay. Starts our
the movie.
Movie synopsis.
Yes. So I Know What You Did Last Summer is kind of like the quintessential example of this very convoluted theme that we came up with for this summer. And one of the elements that it really brings to the table is this idea of the ensemble cast. So the main four characters are Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Ryan Phillippe, which it's like that it doesn't get more quintessentially like late 90s than that team.
Oh, Ryan Phillippe.
Oh my God, so dreamy.
I'm not a huge fan of like blonde.
Yeah.
Like I usually like dark and moody guys, obviously. I know this is surprising to you, but he is a cutie, cutie patootie. So.
But then it also featured Bridget Wilson, Anne Hesch, and Johnny Galecki. So it had lots of familiar faces outside of that, the core four characters. Okay, so the film opens with sweeping views of a rocky coastline and then zooms in on a young man sitting and drinking on the edge of a cliff, clearly distraught.
Wait, one of the best covers that I love so much is Typo Negative, Summer Dreams.
Yeah.
It's like, Summer Dreams.
Oh, is that the song that's playing then?
Feel... Yeah, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, it's very spooky vibe.
Yeah, it's on my Halloween mix.
Really?
Yes.
So it should be familiar to me.
Yeah, continue.
All right, so suddenly fireworks explode overhead, and we transition to a more festive setting, the Croaker Festival. And we pop into the finale of the Croaker Queen beauty pageant. Competitor Helen, who is Sarah Michelle Gellar's character, is being watched from a secluded balcony by her boyfriend Barry, played by Ryan Phillippe, and their friends Julie, who is Jennifer Love Hewitt, and Ray, who's Freddie Prinze Jr., who are also a couple. So these are our core four people. Of course, Helen wins the pageant, and the celebration proceeds to a massive beach party. Helen has a snippy exchange with her older sister Elsa, who is Bridget Wilson's character, while Julie gently declines the advances of a lovesick Max, who is Johnny Galecki's character. Mm-hmm. And this was, like, obviously pre-Big Bang Theory, where, like, Johnny Galecki was really just, like, that kid from Roseanne, I think, to most people at this point. He was, like, trying to get out of that mold.
Mm-hmm.
A drunk Barry gets in a scuffle with Max, which Ray breaks up, and then our main foursome leave the beach bash in Barry's car. Later, they're swapping urban legends over a secluded campfire on a remote beach. And when they leave, Barry is too drunk to drive, so Ray takes the keys. As they're driving, Barry pulls the classic stand up through the sunroof move.
And just scream your guts out.
And just scream your guts out like he's at a bachelorette party on the Vegas Strip.
Yeah.
But they are on a windy mountain road, not on the Vegas Strip. And so, of course, then he drops his bottle of booze and it rolls in underneath the pedals. And in the chaos, they hit something in the road. Then they find the thing they hit is a body. And it seems it's our friend from the opening scene, the guy that we saw sitting on the cliff. She's totally the goody-goody. Julie, she wants to call an ambulance, but the guys say that they should just leave. So obviously they're arguing, like, we're going to get in trouble. This is manslaughter. They're not going to believe that you weren't drinking. Like, they're not going to believe that you were the one driving, all this stuff. Like, big, argument back and forth.
And Ray is very much like, I'm not in the same place, like, like money.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, like, I don't come from money, and this could
ruin my life.
Yeah, yeah. I can't.
Well, it would ruin all their lives, too, because, like, Barry's, headed off with, like, a football scholarship and everything. Like, they're all... And Julie's really the only one that's pushing to, quote-unquote, do the right thing. So as they're arguing, Barry decides that they should dump the body into the ocean. And soon, Ray and Helen are in that camp, too. Like, he's already dead. Like, why ruin all of our lives, too? Like, that old chestnut. But before they can do anything, another car arrives and it's Max. Mm-hmm. So Julie rushes over and sweet talks him and then he heads off. So, he sees that they're all there, but he obviously doesn't see the body. So the group then drives the body to an abandoned dock. But then they get it out to the end of the dock and the argument continues over whether or not they should actually dump him because Julie's, obviously it's not too late. We can still call the police. We can still blah, blah, blah. Finally, Helen has had enough and she goes to push the body into the water when our first jump scare, the body comes back to life and grabs her Croaker Queen crown off of her head because, of course, she's still wearing that. Mm-hmm. And the body sinks into the water holding the crown. So Barry jumps in to retrieve the crown. And while he struggles to get it from the dead man's grip, jump scare again, and still not dead, the body's eyes pop open. But he does remain at the bottom of the water. Barry, recovers the crown, and the four promise each other to take the secret to the grave. I put some more reluctantly than others.
Okay, the part when they're about to, like, throw him into the ocean or whatever.
Yeah.
For some reason, Barry starts screaming to the heavens. I don't really know why.
Because he's Ryan Phillippe and he's dramatic.
I was like, what's happening?
He's having a moment.
Yeah, I really harshed his buzz. I was like, sure.
Yeah, okay. Of course, because that's what I would do. Okay, so now the screen tells us it's 1 year later, and a morose Julie is reluctantly going home for the summer after her failing year away at college. And so she's no longer Princess Perfect, Miss Goody Two Shoes. And I love the biggest difference is the curls in her hair at the beginning. And then when she gets depressed, she no longer curls her hair.
Yeah, she's got stringy dark hair now.
Yeah.
And circles under her eyes, which tells the viewer that something is very wrong.
Yeah, so clearly she has been plagued with this guilt this entire year.
Yeah.
She gets home and is greeted by a handwritten piece of mail with a note. I know what you did last summer. She's Ooh. Like, what? She is obviously upset and spooked. And the next day she heads into town and finds Helen at work. She shows Helen the note and they go to see Barry with it. It's a cold welcome as Barry and Helen have broken up. And Barry is obnoxiously unhelpful in the situation.
Yeah.
In their conversation, Julie reveals that the dead man's name was David Egan, because, of course, she, like, you know, followed the news stories and the reports and everything, because she was the one that was really, you know, grieved by what they had done.
Racked by guilt.
Yeah. So David Egan's death, the police had called it an accidental drowning. And she also mentions that she and Ray had also broken up and lost touch. So, like, you know, these four picture perfect besties at the end of their high school, like, everything, you know, just blew up because of this accident. They just,
like, all ghost each other. They're like, no.
Basically, yeah.
Anything to do with you has to do with
that.
A crime I committed.
So then Barry suggests that Max might have sent the note because he did drive by them on the road that day. So maybe he did know what had happened. Mm-hmm. And so they visit Max at work at the docks. Barry threatens him, but Max claims to have no idea about any letter. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And as the three of them are leaving, they run into Ray, who is also working on the docks. Julie fills him in, but he kind of brushes off the whole thing. He also does apologize for what happened, but she says that she doesn't hold him responsible. But then she says, I don't want to know you either, which I put brutal.
Oh, he said that to her.
No.
Maybe.
No.
Well, she said, I don't want to know you either. Like, does that
no,
mean like...
No, she says, I don't blame you, but I don't want to know you either.
Oh, okay. I thought it was... Sorry, like in a response to something he had told her, no. Like, I don't want to know you. And she's like, well, I don't want to know you either.
No. She's like, it's like, I don't harbor any ill will toward you. I know that I take responsibility for my own actions, but I also do not want to know you because obviously it's just a reminder of what happened. So they're all, you know, like that whole scene is played out. But if you go back to the dock, there's Max unloading the catch and a figure appears, which is a silhouette in a slicker and a rain hat, you know, like kind of Fisher,
Gordon's,
you know,
boat. Fisher.
Gordon's fisherman fish outfit.
Gordon's fish sticks.
Yep. And he spears Max under the jaw with an ice hook. And that is the end of Johnny Galecki.
Aw.
Very sad.
It's okay. He'll get work later.
Yeah, he'll do okay. Okay, so later that evening, Barry heads into the gym to act all tough with the punching bag, but is repeatedly spooked by the apparent presence of any other person. Like, basically, he has this, you know, isolated, you know, coastal town, tiny, busted-ass gym all to himself. But, like, he keeps seeing shadows, and he's like, who is it? Like, there's not supposed to be anyone else there.
No one's here. I'm going to scream at the heavens. Yeah, what's
going
on?
After his shower, he returns to his locker to find a Polaroid of his car. And it was taken with the car, like it was just taken because the car is parked outside of the gym, with the words, I know, written on the back of the Polaroid. After he looks for the culprit, he finds that his Letterman jacket is now missing from his locker.
And then also, like, why is he still wearing it?
Yeah, like, move on.
Freaking loser.
Move on.
Sorry. Sorry, did I just alienate some listeners?
I sure doubt it, actually.
Like, if you're wearing it and you've been out of high school for a while, you're like... Yep.
Put that on mothballs.
Kind of a nerd. Anyway,
yeah. Or
not a nerd, but just, you know, yeah. Can't let go. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe peaked in high school.
Yeah.
We're just alienating them further.
It makes me think of Matthew McConaughey in Days of Confused.
Yeah. Like, yeah, all right. Okay, so then Barry does get outside just in time to see his car being driven away.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. So he gives chase on foot. Yeah, you know, as one does when someone's stealing your car.
He's like, no.
And then the turntables turn and he's being chased. And then he is hit by the car, driven through the side of a building.
Yeah.
Then the same slicker clad figure looms over him with the ice hook and the scene fades out. So we're probably thinking at this point, like, well, that's it for Barry, too. But next, Ray, Julie and Helen are visiting Barry in the hospital. So he's not killed. Julie is still pushing to go to the cops, but Barry insists that someone is just fucking with them because he clearly would be dead if that was the assailant's intent, obviously. Helen suggests that they try to find him, whoever this slicker man is, and reason with him. And then she and Julie go and search the internet for the victim. Mm. And this, I think, is like nothing dates this movie more than their internet searches. Or just like,
maybe I blocked it out. What were they searching for?
They were searching for just information on David Egan, on the victim, because right. they're like, whoever is doing this obviously knew him. So it was like a friend or family member or something. And so they're like looking up the news articles and like, so, and, but it's just like click, click, click. Just any movie where it shows people using computers back in that time period is just hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It definitely has Carrie researching her abilities, her new kinetic, her psychokinetic in the library feel yeah. to it.
No, this was a home computer.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So they're looking for information on David Egan to try and figure out somebody who might have a connection. And what they one of the things they find out is that a year before they killed David, he was in a car accident with his fiancée, Susie, and she died in the same place where they had hit him with the car. And so we as the viewer now know, like, oh, well, that's why he was sitting up on that rock drinking.
All sad
because that was the place, it was the anniversary of the accident that killed his fiance that he was responsible for, essentially. Julie, after reading that, recalls seeing a tattoo of the name Susie on the body that night. So he's like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. He had the Susie tattoo. So they find out where his family home is, which is like way out in the sticks outside their little coastal town. And they drive out there, meeting his super backwoods sister, Missy, who is played by Anne Hesh. And she's like, literally, like, she looks like she belongs in the Leatherface family.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yes.
She's got like wife beater underneath like a leather apron type thing, and she's always like holding a knife.
Yeah. She's like, what you want?
She's just like,
what you girls want?
Plucking a dead chicken at any random moment. Like, it's
styling
just,
at them.
Yeah, it's so over the top.
I love it.
Julie gives Missy a story that their car stalled and she asks to use the phone, and then they make small talk. And they get from Missy that a friend of David's came around after his death to, like, you know, offer his condolences or whatever, and that the friend's name was Billy Blue. So with their plan to find this guy next, like maybe Billy Blue is the guy that's coming after them because he was this friend of David, Julie takes Helen home, and we see the slickered figure sneak into Helen's nighttime house, ice hook in hand. Unaware of his presence, Helen goes to bed and awakes in the morning surrounded by all her newly hacked off hair. Mm-hmm. And the word soon written across her mirror. So like her character like had this like, you know, and obviously we know it was like, you know, extensions or whatever, but this long, luscious hair when she was like the beauty queen and everything. And it was clearly like very important to her and a big part of her identity. So to have it like brutally cut off was, you know, just this real gut punch for her.
And her sister also always give her shit about brushing her hair. She's like, you and your hair.
You and your hair. So she, of course, dramatically smashes the mirror with her fist. I feel like that shot of her looking into the mirror with all of the like cut hair falling off of her and seeing Soon and screaming was like a clip that was like very widely circulated when this movie came out.
Yeah, I think so.
It's a very dramatic moment.
Well, she is very upset.
Indeed. After she smashes the mirror, she calls Julie, who jumps into her car to race over. But while driving, Julie hears a strange noise from the trunk. So she pulls over and pops it open to find Max's body in Barry's jacket covered in live scuttling crabs.
Yeah.
Speaking of dramatic. She's like, oh my God.
She's like, okay. She like runs away.
Yeah. So when she gets to Helen's, Barry's there. And so, of course, she brings them out to the car. But when she shows them the trunk, it's empty. Like, not just empty, but like clean and dry. Mm-hmm. So you're like, wait, what the fuck?
She's like, I didn't make this up.
I'm swearing to God. But now we get the great movie moment of her screaming to the sky, which is their favorite thing to do, in the middle of the street. What are you waiting for? And that's one of my favorite spoofs in the original Scary Movie Anna Faris's character does that. Like, she like just stands like screaming at the sky like over and over and over again until it becomes awkward.
Oh my god. I always kind of want to show the kids or show Charlotte that movie, and then I realize
it's so bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah, I'm like, I tried one time.
I cannot show my kids that, but then they have those little gems.
Yeah, it's perfect, but they just have to be so much older, because I felt the same way. And like a couple years ago, I was like, I'll just watch it and I'll make a note of the scenes that I need to skip or the points that I need to like cover her eyes or whatever. And I got halfway through. I was like, no way. I already had like 3 pages of notes of things that I needed to like shield her from. I'm like, ugh, I just have to wait.
Yeah, you gotta wait.
Yeah. Okay. So, screaming to the sky, screaming to the sky.
Yeah, and then her friends are like, I think your brain's, something's busted. Wrong. She's like, no, I swear, there was a body.
It was Max, and he was wearing your jacket.
He was there.
Yeah. So, the three go to Ray's house, where Barry just walks up and immediately decks him, claiming that Ray is behind everything. He's decided that Ray is the slickered guy. But Ray says, I got a letter, too.
I got a letter.
In his perfect Freddie Prinze Jr. voice.
And they're like, that's cool. I got hit by a car.
Yeah, I got a dead body in my trunk.
My hair got hacked off.
Hacked off, and you got a letter. So in this conversation with the four of them, the girls reveal the name that they got, Billy Blue. And then, Ray goes, what? Billy Blue? And you're like, and then they all decide to check Elsa's yearbook.
Well, they're like, we all know Billy Blue is a piece of shit.
That asshole Billy Blue.
He's a good fucker. He's like, I don't, weird.
I don't know anything about Billy Blue. But, you know, Missy had also given them his, graduation year, David Egan's graduation year in Billy Blue. And Elsa, being Helen's older sister, that was the year that she graduated. And so they're like, let's go check Elsa's yearbook. But he's not in there. There's nobody named Billy Blue in the yearbook. So thinking that he gave Missy a fake name, they consider taking the yearbook to her so that she could identify the guy. But Ray objects. He's like, I don't think that's a good idea. Blah, 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 blah.
You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, rabble rouser.
That's a terrible idea.
Terrible idea. Full of bad ideas. So Julie decides to go see Missy alone while Barry protects Helen during her parade appearance, her mandatory parade appearance as the outgoing Croaker Queen.
I like how it's like, croak. Croak.
So now we're at the parade, and from high atop her clamshell on the float, Helen is scanning the crowd, and she spots a slickered form. So she points him out to Barry. Barry chases him, tackling an unsuspecting old man who's like, what?
I mean, yeah, they live in a fishing village.
Yeah, like every fucking person's wearing a slicker and a hat.
And she's like, that guy. Oh, that guy over there. Look at this guy.
And while, you know, Barry is assaulting senior citizens, Helen then spots the real assailant lurking on a roof, brandishing the ice hook.
Barry's already gone. Croaker Queen.
It's time for the Croaker Queen to croak. So,
I don't know why I think that's so funny.
It didn't occur to me until, it's something that clearly stuck in your brain, never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
I don't use that term to describe death often.
Me neither.
You're going to croak. as Julie's questioning Missy about Billy Blue, Missy reveals that David's death was a suicide.
Who comes at her with a knife again?
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to cut you.
This is just my knife.
I'm just chopping fish heads off the fish.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Julie confesses basically to Missy to be like, we were responsible for his death. And Missy was like, no, get the fuck out of here. He committed suicide. And Julie was like, no, he didn't. We killed him. And how do you know he committed suicide? Well, he left a note. And she goes and gets it and shows it to Julie. And it looks just like the notes they've been getting and reads, I will never forget last summer. So Julie tells Missy, it's not a suicide note. It's a death threat. That David didn't write it, that somebody gave it to David and Missy found it. But I just love that, Missy had no clue what her brother's handwriting looked like. And then you see that one sentence, I will never forget last summer. You're like, well, it's a suicide note.
She's like, it is. And you get out of here. Get.
And she's got her knife.
You better get. I'm like, these fish heads are going to chop themselves.
But Missy doesn't believe Julie that they were the ones responsible for David's death.
But it's weird. It's like, why would they come and be like, I'm really upset. I'm so guilt ridden. Yeah. This is what we did. We have to come clean. They're like, don't think so.
It's an elaborate prank.
And it's like, I don't know. What would be the...
Yeah. Why would they do that?
What would be their angle for doing that?
And so as they're going back and forth, Julie mentions David's Susie tattoo. And Misty says he didn't have any tattoos and tells Julie to leave. It's like, he didn't have any tattoos. Get
on.
Get on out of here.
And then, J-Lo? J-Love.
No, yeah. Well, and Love was J-Love one of her
Hewitt.
Nicknames.
Love Hewitt.
Yeah.
Scampers off.
She's yeah, like, well, because okay, she has a little light bulb moment when Missy says that David didn't have any tattoos and Julie knows that she saw a tattoo on the body. She's like, oh, my God, the body we hit. That wasn't David.
That wasn't.
We killed someone else.
She also said me and Billy Blue had a little thing.
Yeah, Missy.
And he was really cute.
Yeah.
He was a little cutie patootie.
He was real sweet.
And he had dark hair.
Did she say this?
Cute.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
No, she didn't say any of that.
Okay, so back in town at the pageant, Helen is still fulfilling her duties as the outgoing Croaker Queen, while Barry keeps watch from the same secluded balcony that we saw at the beginning of the movie. From the stage, Helen sees the slickered figure appear behind Barry, and even though she starts screaming like a madwoman, Barry is still killed up in the balcony with the ice hook.
And everyone subdues her. They're like, this woman's hysterical.
She can't handle the trauma of losing her crown.
She must be on her period.
Clearly. Look at all the bears.
They're like holding her back.
Yeah.
She's like, get your hand off me.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you subduing her?
Yeah. But I just love that there's a cop in the audience. Like, an on-duty cop is watching this beauty pageant. And so she gets him to go up and look in the balcony, but they find nothing.
He's like, there's nothing. There's just blood spatter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he doesn't even see that, fortunately.
She's like, God, you are so bad at your job.
Yeah, she's like, okay, Opie. So later the cop is driving Helen home and chalks her story up to urban legend because she's telling him the whole thing about who's been, plaguing them.
Yeah.
But of course he doesn't believe. And then a blocked road, you know, there's like a, you know, roadblock up, forces him to drive down an alley. And there's someone with a stalled car. This is all a very contrived setting. So the cop stops to check on this person. The driver is, of course, the fisherman, the slickered man, who then guts the cop with his ice hook. So he planned this whole thing to get the cop to drive Helen down this alley. Then he gets the cop. Helen busts out of the back of the cop car. So she's like, breaks the window.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something that's just easy to do. Break a car window.
She's good at that. Because she smashed the glass and
the
mirror.
That's true. That's true. She has
karate punched
glass smashing abilities.
Yes.
Through her super strength.
Smashing the window would be easy.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I didn't even think of that.
Continuity.
Absolutely. Well, they set the whole thing up so that we would believe that she was able to break a car window because we already saw her smash the mirror.
Yeah, she just punched through the glass.
Yup.
And she was fine. She didn't even see a Band-Aid on her hand later.
Nope.
She was fine.
No cuts on her. So she busts out of the cop car and runs. And so she's now fleeing from the fisherman. Meanwhile, Julie is back on the internet. Rechecking the articles about Susie's death, and she sees that Susie was survived by her father, Ben, a local fisherman.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
What? Okay, so the plot thickens. Now back to Helen, who manages to make it to the family shop on Main Street, and Elsa lets her in just in the nick of time before the fisherman catches up with her.
And Elsa's like, God, you're so annoying.
You're such a little brat.
She's like, someone's trying to kill me. She's like, oh.
Oh my God, always with the killing.
Why are you so dramatic all the time?
So Helen goes to call the cops while Elsa locks the back door, but just a minute too late, the fisherman's already inside and Elsa gets the hook. So poor, poor, beautiful Bridget Wilson is now the next.
Well, she's kind of a bee.
She is a bitch.
She like hates her sister for no reason.
Well, I mean, little sister, I imagine, you know, having Helen as a little sister would be pretty difficult. I bet you she was a real attention whore.
I guess so. But like after a certain age, you know, get over it.
Yeah. But like they're still fairly young, right?
I guess so.
Past that age.
All I'm saying is,
you were happy to
I'm
see her die.
I'm
not mad about it. Lost zero sleep.
I was like, oh, bummer.
So Helen hears Elsa's scream and she goes looking for Elsa among plastic draped mannequins, the classic horror movie trope. Mm-hmm. And we get another jump scare. One of them is the fisherman.
Yeah.
Who saw that coming?
Everyone.
Hands in the air. And so she keeps running. She encounters Elsa's dead body, which is, of course, very traumatic for her, her beloved older sister.
She's like, oh, that bitch.
Sucks to be you. And the pursuit continues. Eventually, Helen leaps to freedom from an upstairs window because she's also a ninja.
She just flew out of the glass again.
Yeah. And she's wearing a gown this whole time, like her pageant queen gown.
It's like a green silk.
Yeah. It was very, very what prom dresses looked like in the, in that season. Like the crisscross, like spaghetti straps in the back were lined with rhinestones.
Yeah.
That was like so. Oh,
Charlotte, though, was like, ooh, I like her dress. Because it is, all of it's coming back,
baby. It's all like a
contempo casual. Yeah.
And wet seal.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Sun back when it was Pacific Sunwear.
Yep. It's all coming back. It's very bad.
We're traumatized. It's giving us heartburn.
Puka shell necklaces. We're like, no. Okay.
So the fireworks show begins for the parade, and Helen is so close to safety as she runs down an alley toward the parade. She can see it. She can almost touch it, but the fisherman is there, and that's lights out for Helen.
Yeah.
And a big stack of tires, as you find in a random alley.
She's running for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, real slow-mo running.
It's like she should have, it's just a long scene. Mm-hmm. She should have gotten away.
It was a long alley. A lot of tires.
They're like, we want her to run all around town.
Forever. She's going to run all the way to this store and then all over the store and then down the longest alley known to man.
Yeah, and still.
And still not make it.
Last moment.
Yeah. Okay. So Julie is downtown now looking for her friends. Not finding Barry or Helen. Who knows why? She heads for Ray's boat because he's the only one left. He's her last choice.
She goes, yuck.
Ew. Okay, fine. She tells Ray that she thinks it was Susie's father that they hit on the road, that he was the one that killed David, but that he survived that night and is now after them.
Yeah.
So basically.
And the body that they hit. The face is all like messed up.
Yeah, it was
and
all
stuff.
Smashed up. Like they couldn't tell if it was a young man or an old man or what it looked like. Like he was obliterated.
So it was no identifying at all.
Like, yeah. So, but she's put it all together that Susie's dad, Ben, blamed David for Susie's death. He sent David the threatening note that Missy interpreted as a suicide note. And he killed David that night. And then after he killed David, they hit him. Mm-hmm. And when they threw him in the water, he was still alive. So now he's the one that's after them.
Yeah.
She's a smart, smart cookie, that Julie. Yes. She put it all together all by herself.
She didn't even need the help of a man.
Nope, but she did need the internet.
Yeah, that's true.
So then Ray coaxes her onto his boat, and she's just about to climb aboard when she sees the boat's name, Billy Blue. And she's like, all of a sudden, her whole theory that she has come up with to deliver to Ray goes right out her mind, and she's like,
you dated Anne Heche?
She's too old for you.
You piece of shit. How long were we broken up?
Gross.
Before you guys went out.
Yeah. So she realizes that he is the friend that went to see Missy. And so all of a sudden that means to her that he's also the fisherman. Like,
well, that he's a liar at least.
Yeah, he's a liar. But she literally is like, it was you. Like, you're the one doing all of this. Like, her whole theory about Ben, which was airtight. Except for the fact that it meant that he had to survive them hitting him with the car and throwing him in the ocean. It's like, it's not Ben after all. Now she thinks it's Ray. So she runs, of course, and Ray chases, wanting to explain. But then Ray gets clotheslined by a random Good Samaritan fisherman who tells Julie to get on his boat safety.
Thanks.
Stranger.
Thank you, stranger.
Like, what the fuck? Like, she's so smart. And then she is like the dumb, dumb, dumb girl in a horror movie.
Yeah.
Here, get on my boat. Like, that's the safest place.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And so, but like a dummy, she does.
She's like, thank you, sir.
I'm so, so grateful for your assistance and your shelter. And as he is untethering the boat, of course, also to get her to safety, right? She is busy discovering all of the evidence inside the boat that this boat owner is Susie's father, Ben. And so he comes in and she's like, it's you, you're Ben. And he gives her his whole villain speech. And you should be out there drinking, partying, running people over, getting away with murder, things like that. She's like, oh, fuck, so it wasn't Ray.
Like, technically, we didn't murder anybody.
That's right, because you're still alive, asshole.
That was just an oopsie daisy.
Whoopsie. Lucky you can hold your breath for a long time.
Yeah, that's lucky.
Okay, so now we have, you know, this whole final pursuit chase scene on the boat itself.
Yeah.
And as it begins, Ray comes to on the dock, regains consciousness, and commandeers a skiff to go after Julie on the boat. Because Ray's our good guy hero. He fights Ben on the deck of the boat, and Julie flawlessly distracts Ray so that Ben can knock him overboard. So it's like the perfect dumb girl moment where your friend is fighting the bad guy, and so what do? You scream your friend's name so that he Yay! Turns and looks at you.
Look over here, my top, I took it off.
Oh no, my boobs popped out, and they're so big because I'm Jennifer Love Hewitt.
No, I don't know. Yeah, that was crazy, but it was fun, a fun scene.
Yeah, it was, as Meredith likes to call things, a romp.
A romp.
But so now Ben has knocked Ray overboard, so now again, yeah. It's just Ben and Julie
on the board.
He's being
dragged through the ocean.
But he is our lovesick hero, and he uses the rigging to climb back on board.
Because he has a lot of know-how, and he works on a boat.
That's right, and a lot of upper body strength from hauling all those fish traps. Crab traps, fish lines. He's got crabs.
He has to pull rope all the time.
He's just yanking on rope all day.
Rope all the time. I don't know anything about this.
We know so much about commercial fishing.
Everyone knows.
We watch a lot of, what's that show? Deadliest Catch?
I've never seen that
Never
show
seen
in
it in my life. Anyway, back to the movie. Julie is still trying to escape, and we get the body discovery of Helen and Barry that he is very wisely stored in the ice hold. Yeah. Because where do you put corpses? On ice.
On ice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just as Ben finds and catches up with Julie, Ray knocks him out. He wakes up again. You know, there's a whole, we got him. No, we didn't. Yeah, we got him. No, we didn't. The struggle continues until Ben's dramatic final line to Julie, when you leave a man for dead, make sure he's really dead. Because, of course, Ray is knocked out behind him. And then Ray, you know, wakes up. And then
she's like, you need to follow your own advice.
Follow your own advice. Maybe you should look in the mirror when you say that. But Helen smashed all the mirrors.
I smashed. Helen just smashed all the mirrors with her fist.
Yeah, she just went around town smashing them. I don't know why that's funny.
Well, because a lot of the scenes, well, in a lot of the movies we've watched in the late 90s, early aughts, were very dramatic for no reason.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like much older adults who are writing this, and they're like, she needs to smash the window really hard.
That's what a teenager would do.
And you're like,
and we
what?
Were like super intense teenagers being like, yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
I can relate to Helen's character so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. All right. So we get that his final line and then his equally dramatic exit, which is how his hook wielding hand gets snagged by the rigging. He's hauled up until the hand is severed by the pulley at the top of the rigging. So then Ben falls again, but his foot is caught in the ropes. So then he swings through the air and flies off the ship and into the water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to be done right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, it was like a whole circus act.
Yes, it was a Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
On the boat, right out into the ocean.
Yeah. And then,
but we all know he can hold his breath really well.
Really long time. He's one of those pearl divers. What is wrong with
pearl divers? No, abalone.
That too.
Abalone.
Okay. So now it's like, okay, the scene is concluded, and yeah, we cut to chase. Now all of the law enforcement is there, like all of the authorities and the officials and the ambulances, and Ray and Julie are standing, you know, holding each other wrapped in the emergency blankets and everything. And they have, you know, it was a sickeningly dramatic conversation that included the lines. And I recorded these word for word. Ray says to her, I love you, Julie. No one gets me the way you do. And then she looks up at him and goes, I understand your pain. And you're like, oh, God, this hurts to watch.
You're like, okay.
I understand your pain. She does. She does understand his pain.
But, okay.
did you have more to say
I'm like,
about
what pain? No, is it just him, like, being sad about them maybe killing somebody? There was no
meaning behind it. That's why it was so horrible.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, so law enforcement is all over the place, and though Ben's hook-clutching hand is still caught in the nets, there is no body. And so the cop says to Ray and Julie, "Don't worry, body will turn up. They usually do."
It'll turn up.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay.
Don't be threatened about this at all.
Because even if he's alive, he's only got one hand.
What's the worst that could happen?
Two sequels. Okay, so then we get, again, another 1 year later title card on the screen. And I put a re-perkified Julie. So she's got the curls back in her hair.
Self.
Yeah. She's on her cell phone with Ray, getting ready to get into the dorm showers, wrapped in a towel, having this super flirtatious, lovey-dovey conversation with Ray.
Yeah. She's very happy. She's doing everything's really well better in school. She's yeah. like, I'm on the dean's list. Oh my God. My whole life is
you can ravage to me next week, buddy.
Oh, God.
But before she can get in the shower, a friend drops off a letter. The writing on the outside looks like the fisherman letters, but it turns out to be a sorority invite. Oh, my gosh. She's like, oh, I'm so relieved. I was afraid it was all starting again. But back in the shower room, she finds the words, "I still know," written in steam on the glass. And the final jump scare of the fisherman leaping through the glass of the shower door straight out to the camera. And it cuts to black.
Yeah, it was probably Helen. She hates glass.
Fucking Helen. She came back to life to continue her assault on glass surfaces around the world. Yeah. So that is I Know What You Did Last Summer. Meredith? Mm-hmm. Did you think it was scary?
No.
Oh. Really?
No. I mean, when I watched it when I was a kid, I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
I don't remember being scared. Okay. So I remember being like, oh, this is like a fun movie. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it. I felt very different about Scream.
Mm-hmm.
Scream scared me. There was like parts where like, oh, God. You know, it was just the writing seemed a lot more, very much a lot stronger. But
yeah.
It came from the same people.
It did?
I think I want to say they did Scream as well. And then...
like the writers? Mm-hmm. Directors?
What? And then he did this first, I think,
mm-hmm.
from what I can tell, what I read about it. But then they're like, yeah, no. And then Scream did so well, then they like bought the option. Then they did this. They're like, well, of course we'll do this. And he's like, great! Because okay. I wanted to... But this was based on a book. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, like, quite as dramatic as the movie.
Right. Yeah, because this just came out a year after Scream, right? Scream was 96.
Yes. Yeah, so I want to say I could be misremembering what I read about it or that what I read was incorrect. Mm-hmm. But I think it was the same people.
Okay.
But, yeah, I remember thinking it was really fun. I liked the villain. Could have been anybody.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, they live in a fishing town. There's, like, those guys who are dressed like that everywhere. Yeah.
And well, they popped in a lot of red herrings. Like, was it Max? Was it Ray? Was it Ben? Was it Ray?
Was it the sister?
Could have been her. She was pretty fucking crazy and always had a knife.
She seemed really good with a knife.
Yeah.
And, like, she had the grief of her losing her brother.
Right.
You know, you don't know. So I thought it was fun. I really enjoyed the characters. I thought they were a little over the top and ridiculous, but I still liked it even back then when I was a kid. As an adult, I'm watching it again. I'm like, that's kind of ridiculous.
It's
but
so
I
cringy.
Still like it. It's fun.
Yeah.
Charlotte watched it with me, and at first she was like, ugh, this is not. And then suddenly she's like, oh gosh. Like when they hit a guy, they're like, what do we do? And she's like, call the cops. And they're like, we're not calling the cops. She's like, they're just going to leave. And I'm like, yeah. And then she gets that note, I Know You Did Last Summer. She's like, oh my God, somebody knows.
So it still works on the age group it's targeted
toward. Exactly. So I watched, I like relived it with Charlotte. It was really fun actually yeah. watching it again. So I would say not scary, a little suspenseful, just really fun.
Yeah.
A really fun summer movie, which I think it's what it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
yeah.
Do you think it's scary?
No. And I remember I have an interesting story about this. So listeners, I have two older brothers. You may not have known that. The middle child in our family, my older brother, Mickey, does not do horror movies. As a matter of fact, when we started this podcast, he was really excited because he was saying that it was perfect because he is always curious about what happens in horror movies, but he doesn't want to watch them. Yeah. So he's like, oh, I can listen to your podcast and I'll know what happens. Like, I'll get the story without having to watch the movie. Now, having said that, I don't think he's ever listened to the podcast.
But he liked the idea.
He liked the idea of the podcast. Okay, so rewind to when he was class of 97, just like all of our heroes in this film. And so I remember very distinctly. So he was a senior when this came out, and I was a freshman when he was a senior. And he and I didn't live together at that point. Like, he had moved to a different place, my dad and my other brother, when I was going into seventh grade. So we hadn't lived together for a couple of years, and we weren't very close, did not know each other very well at all. Spent zero time together. But he randomly tells me at that point, he was like, oh, my God, I saw the scariest movie ever made. And I was like, you know, really? Okay, tell me more, because I already, you know, was as a seventh grader, well-versed with horror movies, and he knew that. And he told me this story about, you know, it was just one this little, like, rinky-dink theater in Elk Grove where he was living, was running the movie, and he hadn't seen any commercials for it. He didn't know what it was about. He didn't know who was in it. He didn't know anything about it. And a bunch of his friends were like, hey, we're going to go see a movie. You want to come? And he's like, sure. And he just went, right? Mm-hmm. As we used to do back in the day. Like, you saw everything in the theater just because for something to do.
Yeah.
Like, I saw the Shaft movie with Sam Jackson in the theater. I saw Mr. Wrong, Ellen DeGeneres's romantic comedy with Bill Pullman in the theater. Like, I saw Ace Ventura 2 in the theater. Anyway, so he goes with his friends. He sees this movie and gets just the complete shit scared out of him. Mm-hmm. And he recommended to me, like, don't find out anything about it. Just go and do it totally blind. Like, don't know anything about it. It's so, so, so scary. And I did that. And I was not scared. And so I was like, wow, this scared him. Like, really learning something about my brother in the process of this.
Simple man.
And it's, I still very much subscribe to that attitude of, like, if you want to be scared by a horror movie, learn as little about it as possible ahead of time. Don't watch, because they always show, like, the scariest moments, the best jump scares, the best images. They show those in the trailers. And so if you watch the trailer, then when you watch the movie, you're like, oh, this is the scene where that thing happens. Or you, yeah, like, know what's coming, and it really does take away from it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very anti, like, front-loading anything about scary movies. And I think that that maybe comes from that story of this movie with my brother Mickey. Yeah, but
it didn't scare you.
It did not scare me. No. But it was fun. Like you say, it was entertaining. It was not a real brain-busting whodunit, but a little bit of fun twists and turns. And if you did see it in the theater, like, some jump scares that would make someone like me jump, not you.
Yeah, it definitely has a YA novel little book, you know, feel all over it. We're like, ah, who was it? You? Like,
oh my God.
Don't tell anybody. We ran over him. Let's just throw him in the ocean. It's fine.
That's such a 17-year-old solution to a problem.
I can't get in trouble. I'll get grounded.
I killed a man. But I won't be able to go to the party next weekend.
I know, my mom. Yeah, it's very much like a stew and scream, like, my mom and dad are gonna be so mad at me.
Yeah.
Oh, which I love that line. That's, like, still one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's classic. Yeah, and so do you want to share your research into this before I mention the sequels?
Yes, it's only a few little things that I found mildly interesting. Honestly, there's not a lot of crazy stuff. So it's just Freddie Prinze Jr. was not really known for much except for being the son of a comedian, mm-hmm. Like Chico and the Man. Freddie Prinze Sr. was in that. And then he, like, went and buffed up, and then he was in that movie and then a bunch of other movies later. And then Melissa Joan Hart was offered a role, and she didn't want to be in it.
Because it was a horror, or she just didn't think it was good?
She just felt like it was kind of a ripoff of Scream.
Well, how would she have known that?
Because Scream came out first in 96.
But if she was being offered the role before this was even made, that had to have been before Scream was released.
I don't know. She just said she didn't take it because she'd just seen Scream, and she didn't want to she read the script for this. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not.
I think she's full of shit. I'm calling bullshit on Melissa Joan Hart, because if Scream came out in 96 and then she got an offer, like they hadn't, so they were able to cast, film, edit, and release in less than a year this movie.
I have no idea, but they said.
I think she's a liar. That Clarissa.
Clarissa explains bullshit. Jack shit. Sorry, Melissa Joan Hart. I liked you in Sabrina. Anyway, so.
Everybody always said I looked like her. And I didn't have cable growing up, so I didn't know what they were talking about.
Like the eyebrows, maybe.
Well, and that's the thing is she was blonde with dark eyebrows, and my natural hair. You haven't ever seen me with my natural hair color, but my natural hair color is not quite as blonde as hers, but pretty light. Yeah. So maybe that was it. And then she did that Maxim issue.
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. And like, you got a little pervy.
Oh. I know nothing really about her except for she was in the old school Sabrina. That's all I know.
Well, she was in that movie Crazy, something, Drive Me Crazy with Adrienne Grenier. That Britney Spears did the crazy, I know too much about Melissa Joan Hart. I'm going to stop now.
I don't know anything about her. Okay. But now you are calling her a liar, so shots fired. So Ryan Phillippe, who plays Barry, obviously he had done some supporting roles in other movies. I loved him in White Squall. Man, that was heartbreaking.
I don't know if I've ever seen White Squall.
I remember seeing it when I was a kid.
Was this before or after? Not Dangerous Liaisons, but the ripoff of Dangerous Liaisons with Reese Witherspoon. Cruel Intentions. Was this before or after
Cruel
Intentions?
It was like in 95, I want to say, maybe. It was Ridley Scott did it, White Squall. And it was just basically a boat movie. And it was, I think it's based on a true story.
Is that how you know so much about boats and rigging?
Yeah. But, yeah, he was suggested by his girlfriend, Reese Witherspoon, to be up for this role.
Yeah.
And I know he did last summer, which obviously like launched his career. So
she's like, I want to watch you do dirty scenes with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. She's like, I just threaten you to earn your keep.
You freeloader.
And then we know that Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Michelle Gellar, they were friends, and then two years later, they got married.
Yeah.
And then they've been married ever since.
Oh, yeah, they still, because Reese Witherspoon and Ryan Phillippe got divorced.
Yeah.
But
Freddie Prinze Jr. and Michelle Gellar are still strong.
Kids?
Yep. They have children. They've been together for, like, ages. It's crazy. Let's see. They earned their R rating, but the director didn't want to do many horrible deaths, but he was like encouraged by the studio to be like, hey, this is like a slasher.
Yeah, slash more.
So slash some more. So he added that scene where Max gets killed.
Yeah, I was about to say Max's death is the only one that's really shown and really brutal.
Yeah, and then had to add some blood when Helen got cut. Wait, no. I can't remember. Elsa is being chased. Anyway,
Helen finds Elsa's body and it's like laying on the floor in the bathroom, and she's got like blood all over and stuff.
Yeah, I had to add some to make it like a little spicier. And then let's see what else is there. Oh, the one of the most important or iconic scenes where Julie's like, "What are you waiting for?"
screaming to the heavens.
And then that part was directed by a kid who won a contest.
Oh my God, of course it was.
Where you're like, why do you need this?
Yeah. What?
Well,
okay.
It worked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was written, a kid won a contest to come and help direct the movie. Oh, and he was like, just scream into the street.
I feel so bad for Jennifer Love Hewitt having to take that direction from a child and do that. That's so embarrassing.
Yeah. But then later she's like, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
She probably wasn't taking the whole thing that seriously. Yeah.
And then also, I don't know, weird things bother me in movies.
We're going to talk about Sydney brushing her hair with someone else's hairbrush again.
So, remember in the boat, she takes off her sweater and pulls up the door with it.
Yes.
And I was like, why do we need that? Mm-hmm. That was put in there for continuity error.
Oh.
Because she was shirtless for a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, not like shirtless, but like just had her tank top on and she's running around.
And then they realized that they never showed her go from having the sweater on to not having the sweater on.
Yeah, something was going on, so they had to do that. And I was like, why are they showing that? That seems on purpose.
Yeah, it did seem, because I remember watching that thinking, like, would that really make it easier to pull that door open?
I'm like, really?
To, like, have a like a pulley?
You didn't need...
I feel like your hands would do the same job.
So, that's right.
I thought you were about to say because she was about to climb into a bunch of ice and they wanted her to be nipping out.
Maybe, but it was gelatin ice.
Yeah.
It was not real
And
ice.
She wasn't nip because that was, she wasn't that Scream Queen character.
No.
She wasn't a Rose McGowan.
No, she wasn't. So anyway, that was added. I don't know why.
Interesting.
I thought it was interesting, but I was annoyed by it in the movie and then mm-hmm. and then later I was like, oh,
feel better? Less annoyed?
I feel vindicated.
Yeah. You're like, I knew there was something wrong with that.
I knew that was stupid and a superfluous reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I have. There's really not much.
I mean, I feel like that was a real treasure trove of tips and
stuff that
factoids.
No one cares about.
Yep. Okay, well then we just a quick check-in on the sequels. There was one sequel.
Was that the one with Brandy?
Yes. So okay. It was called I Still
Once.
Know What You Did Last Summer.
I saw it one time.
Yeah. And it had a pretty good... So obviously, Ryan Phillippe and Sarah Michelle Gellar were not in it because their characters were killed in the first one. But Jennifer Love Hewitt was still the lead. And Freddie Prinze Jr., while he wasn't in most of the scenes, his character still figured prominently in the movie. Mm-hmm. They backfilled the cast with not only Brandy, but the man playing her boyfriend, Mekhi Phifer.
Hey.
And then Bill Cobb was in it.
I love him in Dawn of the Dead.
Yes. Yeah, Mekhi. I love him in 8 Mile. I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, so Bill Cobb was in it, Jennifer Esposito was in it, and Jack Black was in it.
Yeah, he was a very unknown person.
Yeah, and he was like this totally like culturally appropriating like white Rastafarian dreadlocked like pot dealer.
Yes.
It was really upsetting.
Those guys exist.
Yeah, they sure do.
They just do.
And so it's again like a whodunit. Is he back? Is he not dead? What's still, you know, what's still going on? And you get a pretty good explanation at the end of like, how is this still happening? I don't know, unpopular opinion, maybe. I thought this was a better movie than the first one. If you're just looking at these as slasher movies,
mm-hmm.
The sequel was more formulaic. Mm-hmm. It was polished enough. It wasn't, you know, like stupid or weak, but it had more of the essential slasher elements, mm-hmm. and it didn't try to be dramatic and suspenseful like the first one did. And because you could say the first one tried and kind of failed to create like a Hitchcockian, you know, setting or story or whatever. And if it had succeeded at that, then we'd be having a completely different conversation. But mm-hmm. it didn't really reach that bar. And so it didn't manage to really be like a suspenseful scary movie, and it didn't really manage to be a pure slasher movie. So the first one kind of like walked a line between not really doing either of those things. Mm-hmm. And the sequel was like, nope, this is a slasher. And I think maybe
I remember liking it.
It might have had something to do because you said that the original was based on a book. And I'm sure that the sequel was just written as a screenplay. Mm-hmm. That because I'm sure that the book story did not continue in this fashion.
Well, it deviated a lot from the book. It's just basically like these kids ran over some money and they're like, we can't get in trouble for this kind of thing.
And which is a great premise.
Yeah.
And it does align with that whole urban legend, you know, Easter egg that they keep mentioning in the first mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
But in the second movie, they were definitely like, nope, we're just going to write a slasher sequel and we're going to like try and bank on success that this first movie had, get some of these stars back and just make a slasher movie.
Yeah. So they come out in the summer or whatever.
Yeah.
And it fill the audience.
It like pulled the same whodunit thread of because like somebody is doing something and Julie knows that it's related to what had happened to her personally, but it's her and a whole bunch of new people that weren't part of the original story.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she seems crazy and but there's a lot of is it this person? Is he really not dead or is it like someone else, like a completely different character that is, you know, participating for some other reason. And then at the end of the revelation at the end, you were like, it's kind of cringy, but, it's also like, oh, that's perfect. You know? So I really liked, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
I Still Know What You Did.
I thought it was fun. Now the third one, and the only reason I really even know it existed is because once upon a time I bought a 3-pack of the DVDs.
Of course you did.
the third one is called I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer. Mm-hmm. And it is actually unrelated. The storyline is not continued from the first two movies to this one.
Mm-hmm. Are there any memorable people?
No. Okay. And I think it went straight to video.
Okay.
So, but basically they just take the same premise, only this one, it's like a bunch of teenagers like plan this elaborate prank and someone is accidentally killed.
Oh, okay.
And then they all have to make the decision to not tell anybody and take the secret to their grave. And then the same, you know, spool is rolled out for the rest of the film. Okay. I didn't finish it because it was hot dumpster garbage.
Where is your commitment?
Yeah.
You're like, I'd rather watch Phantasm 7.
Right? It was like an episode of One Tree Hill.
Oh.
And bummer. I never watched that either, but it's how I imagine.
Yeah, that's like what you think it would be.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'll avoid that then.
Yeah. But if you want to, I've got the DVD. You can borrow it.
I think I'm good.
But anyway, so yeah, I would highly, highly, highly recommend I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, but please don't ever accidentally put on I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer.
You'll be very disappointed. That would be a mistake.
You'd be waiting the whole time for Mekhi Phifer to show up.
Yeah, and he's not gonna.
He's not going to. Nope. Yeah, I love so that guy. You can't even call it a trilogy. Like the last one was just a, as you like to call it, a cash grab, and I doubt it was even successful at that.
Probably not. Yeah. But I'm glad we're talking about this because they will be, it's in the works to do a reboot of mm-hmm. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Sort of like what they did for Scream and Halloween. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it'll be a continuation of the original.
Yeah.
And
rather than a remake.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I think there's talk that it will be like that, like kind of approaching it from Scream, where it's like, this is what happened 25, like just like,
and these people are all like writing in their 30s and 40s now.
Yeah. And good writing, and hopefully it'll be done very well, like the Scream movies were done fantastically. Yeah. I thought they were great, and it's my hope that will be the case this time. So,
but you know what's kind of horrifying is when you think about the fact that Jennifer Love Hewitt's probably almost 50.
She actually, I watched this thing on it, you know, when I was looking for this movie about stuff about it, and then a possible reboot of it. It's really seriously in the works. Mm-hmm. So I imagine in the next few years it's going to happen. But she was like, I'd be in it again. But you know, if I'm reprising my role, I mean, I've had some kids. It's like I'd be coming from a different,
not a hot chick anymore.
I'm not a like spunky. It's like I've seen some things. Mm-hmm. So. I thought that was, she still looks really good. She looks great. And I think she'd be really, it'd be fun to mm-hmm. have her.
She hasn't worked in a long time though, has she?
Well, she was in that Ghost Whisperer show that did really well.
But that was a while ago, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. I want to say like just took time off probably to do
her
like,
family
yeah. stuff like that. So I don't think it was for any kind of like particular reason or mm-hmm. whatever, but,
yeah, she did an episode of Special Victims Unit once that I really liked.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people do that. That you mentioned it. And you're like, they did a Special Victim Unit. I'm like, I've never watched that show, really.
Well, every person ever acted in the history of U.S. acting has been on an episode of Special Victims Unit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, good talk. And I'm glad this is our introduction.
Yeah, I think it was a perfect way to kick it off.
Late 90s. Mm-hmm. Early 2000s slasher. And then next time we will be talking about Final Destination.
Final Destination with the heartthrob Devon Sawa.
Oh, we love him.
Love him so much.
So I think that'll be really fun. That was my daughter's request. She was like, I really want to be on that show maybe. We'll see.
So yeah, we might have a guest on with us. Yeah.
Yeah, there's skunk smell.
Skunk is that skunk? Startled. I thought it was burning.
No, I think a skunk's outside.
There's a skunk on fire outside?
I don't know.
Flaming Skunk. That's a good band name.
The Flaming Skunks. Like Mouse Rat. Yep. Flaming Skunk. So we'll talk about that next time. I'm excited.
Final Destination.
I want to say I have all the movies on DVD somewhere. Like,
really?
I'm a Katie.
Because I don't have any. That's a series that I don't have a single one of
them. We'll see. It might be in my closet that I've hoarded.
You can gift it to me.
That I've hoarded, yeah. All right. Thanks for joining. Oh, and then should kids watch this? Charlotte watched it.
Yeah. It's, like you say, it's not very bloody.
Yeah. I think it's PG-13, maybe. Is it or no?
Maybe. And there's no dirty stuff. There's no nothing. It's not really. I think it's a good level of scary. So this is probably a good intro horror movie for a tween.
And even like the sexy scenes, it's just making out in the sand.
Yeah, they're just kissing. Yeah, like Sarah Michelle Gellar kind of like straddles, but they're fully clothed and they're talking the whole time.
She's like wearing his Letterman jacket and her crown.
It's very cute.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, show it to your kids.
Show it to your kids. What do you have to lose?
What do you have to lose? What's the big deal?
Who cares? All right, we'll see you next time. Bye.